This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. The UK is marking the death of its longest reigning monarch amid calls in former colonies in the Caribbean to remove the British sovereign as their head of state. Ukraine's northeastern Kharkiv region is reportedly witnessing fierce battles, with President Zelensky saying forces have recaptured more than 30 settlements in the area. And Iran's embassy in Brussels denounces NATO for repeating what it calls Albania's baseless accusations on Tehran's role in a recent cyber attack on the country. Thank you for joining us. Global reverberations continue following the passing of Britain's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, at the age of 96 after 70 years on the throne. Britain's new monarch, King Charles III, made his first public appearance to address the nation and thank well-wishers. With a state funeral plan followed by coronation ceremony, Amina Taylor looked ahead to the challenges facing the new king.
Britain has a new monarch. King Charles III used his first address to the nation since taking the throne to pay tribute to his late mother.
Queen Elizabeth was a life well lived, a promise with destiny kept, and she is mourned most deeply in her passing. That promise of lifelong service I renew to you all today.
Earlier, the new king, alongside Queen Consort Camilla, met well-wishers gathered outside Buckingham Palace, paying their respects after the passing of Queen Elizabeth II on Thursday. Gun salutes, floral tributes, and flags flying at half-mast symbolised the country in the first phase of an official 12-day mourning period. Messages of condolences flooded in from world leaders, with domestic tributes being led in the House of Commons by the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss.
Today, we show the world that we do not fear what lies ahead. We send our deepest sympathy to all members of the royal family. We pay tribute to our late Queen, and we offer loyal service to our new King.
These are unprecedented times, and the parliamentarians will be getting used to saying God save the king instead of God save the queen. But what will a monarchy under the stewardship of Charles III really look like? Charles's ascension to the throne comes following a seven-decade-long reign by the late monarch.
Lots of people who maybe were not great fans of the monarchy as an institution respected Queen Elizabeth II for her longevity, for her record. They forgot many of the things that she was also associated with, the end of empire, which is often very brutal in places like Kenya. But they gave her some respect, and you'll see that, I think, over the next 12 days. You'll see people prepared to give that respect to the Queen. I think it's going to be a very different story going down the road, and we should remember that the monarchy is very important to the British elite. The armed forces, the security services, judiciary, they swear loyalty not to Parliament, but to the monarchy.
Charles's new role as king comes at not just a tumultuous time for the throne, but for the country itself.
If he's going to be an effective king, he will have to speak to the nation in a way that brings people together. And that may involve him, and as Charles has known to do this in the past, be a very much more politically overly political monarch than some of his predecessors. He's made interventions on various issues, and I think he'll continue to do that going forward.
At home and abroad, there'll be questions about what Britain's new monarch's vision will be. Will the tentacles of the new reign bring forth a new dawn? Former subjects across the world will simply wait and see. Amina Taylor, London.
Calls are growing in former colonies in the Caribbean to remove the British monarch as their head of state. That after the ascension of Charles to the UK throne after the death of her mother, Queen Elizabeth II. Some Commonwealth leaders have expressed unease about the passage of leadership from Elizabeth to Charles. There are doubts about the role a distant monarch should play in the 21st century. In Jamaica and the Bahamas, people are calling for reparation and an apology for slavery. This is why Barbados, one of a dozen Caribbean nations which are Commonwealth members, ditched the Queen as head of state last year. Jamaica has signaled it may follow suit. A survey shows 56% of Jamaicans favor removing the British monarch as the head of state. Activists in the region also argue that Charles' accession is an opportunity to redouble calls for slavery reparations. Journalist and political commentator Syed Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier to tell us more about the challenges that the new British monarchy will face after ascending the throne.
Charles is really getting on in age, and you don't know me, that this family has quite an age longevity, of course, as we know, but how long will his reign last? Will he be able to make that kind of impact? He's also, don't forget, now presiding over a very different kind of Britain that's emerging. What with all of the energy crisis and the world in flux as we see it around the globe today, Britain is also going to have to find its own way with the Brexit scenarios, with the relationships with China, America, etc., to balance the war in Ukraine. He's coming into a world which is probably equally fraught. I mean, the Queen herself came at the tail end of the Second World War, of course, and he's also going to have to deal with a complete change in the type of society that we're living in, the information age and the biotechnological age, the age of transhumanism, the age of, if you like, all sorts of modern technological advances will have its own challenges.
Moving on, Ukraine's president says the country's forces have retaken control of dozens of towns as they push a counteroffensive against Russian forces in the northeast. Zelensky's comments follow reports that fierce battles are underway in Kharkiv region. Moscow has not confirmed any advances by the Ukrainian forces, but it says it's sending in more reinforcements to the area. Intense fighting is also raging in the south, where Ukrainian counteroffensive is making progress in the Russian-held Kherson region. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials say 8 people were killed and over a dozen were injured in attacks on a town in the eastern Donbass region. Russia has denied targeting civilians. A new report on poverty in France has revealed the devastating economic effects caused by Europe's sanctions war on Russia. Multiple indicators have reached record lows showing that their lower classes are worse off than in decades. Rami Mazouri has more from Paris.
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
The poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people, because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next 2 economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2%, and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a social safety net for those who are on bottom as far as health care is concerned and other basic necessities. But since Macron got elected, a lot of those things have changed because Macron has decided that he's going to attack that social safety net.
The report showed that a near universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iran's embassy in Brussels slams NATO for rehashing Albanian accusations that Tehran was behind a recent cyber attack on the country. The embassy rejected the accusations as baseless, denouncing NATO for aiding and abetting anti-Iran cyber attacks. It has also urged NATO members to refrain from harboring terrorists. Tehran has cut diplomatic ties with Tehran over the alleged cyber attack. Iran says it is itself a victim of cyber attacks and condemns the use of cyberspace as a tool to attack the critical infrastructure of other states. Relations between Tehran and Tirana have been tense since the Balkan nation provided safe haven to the anti-Iran terror group MKO. The MKO has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian statesmen and civilians. The group was once blacklisted by the U.S. and the EU, but has been delisted by both and enjoys their support. We've been talking to historian and social activist Ulsi Jazeshi about Albania's decision to sever ties with Iran. He believes the U.S. and Israel are behind Tehran's anti-Tehran position. Have a listen.
Albania has become a hostile country to Iran since 2016, when it was ordered by the Americans to host the terrorist organization of Mujahideen al-Halk. Since their location to Albania, the Mujahideens, they have carried numerous cyber attacks and propaganda attacks and maybe even terrorist attacks against the Islamic Republic. These attacks, which go contrary to the penal code of Albania, have gone unpunished. The Albanian government learns about this, but they are afraid from the Americans to act. The Mujahideens are used in Albania by Israel, and if you see the Israeli media today and yesterday, they are very happy with what Prime Minister Edi Rama is doing. So the latest attack against Iran most probably was coordinated with Israel, but very surprisingly, we had even the American and the British government, which in a way they supported the extreme measure by Edi Rama.
And the United States continues to plunder Syria's national resources, smuggling a new batch of stolen oil into Iraq. According to Syrian media, the convoy contains 88 oil tankers. U.S. forces have transferred the convoy to their bases in northern Iraq. Last month, the Syrian oil ministry said the U.S. and the militant groups it supports pillaged over 80% of Syria's daily crude production in the first half of 2022. The United States maintains nearly 1,000 troops in Syria with the alleged goal of fighting terrorist groups. Syria has time and again condemned what it calls the U.S. occupation of the country and the looting of its oil. We have talked to our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali, about the U.S. presence in Syria and the pillage of the Arab nation's oil. He says the oil revenues help the U.S. finance its military forces in Syria and support terrorists. Now listen.
It's using it in order to finance its presence over there in Syria and also giving some of them to Syria's democratic forces instead of just paying from its own pockets for its presence in Syria. So it's occupying Syria. It's using this money to finance its presence, to give the Syria's democratic forces some of that money, and also to support some various terrorist groups on the ground in Syria. We all know that there are confirmed reports about the U.S. training terrorists of Daesh and other groups in Al-Tanf, for example, on the border between Syria and Iraq and other places also. So this is what, what the United States is doing, according to many reports, according to many analysts. It's using that money to finance its presence, to train terrorists, also sometimes to directly give those terrorist groups some ammunition and arms in order to keep fighting the Syrian army, keep dividing the country, keep the crisis ongoing and prolong it as much as possible, because it is not in the benefit of the United States to for security to return back to Syria, for the Syrian government to recontrol its territories and its oil resources, because this would mean that the United States has to go out, and this is definitely something that it doesn't want.
Palestinians have rallied in the Gaza Strip to slam Israeli violations against Al-Aqsa Mosque and the occupied Old City of Al-Quds. The Friday rally comes amid rising Israeli violations against Al-Aqsa Mosque. Ashraf Shannon gives us more details in the following report from Gaza.
A rally has been held in the besieged Gaza Strip to show support for Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds against the growing Israeli aggressions. Protesters have chanted slogans against the Israeli regime and called for an end to the Israeli occupation. Tensions have soared in Al-Quds in recent weeks as extremist Israeli settlers backed by Israeli forces desecrated Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned the Israeli regime against committing violations in Al-Quds.
The Zionist enemy must understand that violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque will not be tolerated by the Palestinian people. Our people will defend Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque with all means. Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line that must not be crossed.
People have come out to reiterate their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against the Israeli attacks. Al-Quds is a holy region of significant importance for all Muslims around the world.
Palestinian resistance groups will defend Al-Quds and will always be a safety valve to protect our people. Armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine.
Palestinians stress that Al-Quds will always remain the capital of Palestine despite the U.S. and Israeli plots to change its status.
This protest is sending a strong message to the whole world that Gaza will not sit idly while Al-Quds is being desecrated. Al-Quds is the eternal capital of Palestine. We also want to condemn the daily killing of our people in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces and the construction of illegal settlements as well as home demolitions.
Since the Israeli occupation of Al-Quds in 1967, the city and Al-Aqsa Mosque have been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice.
Palestinians in the blockaded coastal territory say that they will use all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
That's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Britain's former Foreign Secretary Liz Truss has won the ruling Conservative Party's leadership race, achieving the parliamentary majority to become the country's next Prime Minister and replacing Boris Johnson, who was forced to resign after a series of scandals. Liz Truss will be coming to Downing Street facing a series of domestic and foreign challenges, such as the conflict in Ukraine and a bad economic situation recently made worse by increasing food and energy prices. Also, due to the scandals created by the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, his wrong measures decreased the public trust in government, which will make work more difficult for the incoming Prime Minister Liz Truss. she must return to the people this lost trust. One of the actions that was taken by Boris Johnson was the Partygate scandal, which during the coronavirus pandemic meant that he was seen in forbidden parties at No. 10 Downing Street, and this greatly damaged the trust of British people in their government. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the world media. Please stay with us. The British daily The Guardian wrote, Liz Truss was named as the new Prime Minister by first MPs at the Queen Elizabeth II Centre in Westminster on Monday, 5th of September, following a grueling 8-week leadership campaign. Truss will be coming to Downing Street facing a myriad of domestic and foreign challenges, chief among them the conflict in Ukraine and a toxic economic situation recently made worse by soaring food and energy prices. On the campaign trail, she had promised immediate action to help tackle an all-consuming cost-of-living crisis. Soaring cost of gas and electricity is widely expected to be the main issue defining her first few months in office. Her team claims it has been working on a package to help struggling households, but details of the programme have not been made public. In her victory speech on Monday, Liz Truss promised to deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our economy. She said, I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills, but also dealing with the long-term issues we have on energy supply. Liz Truss ended her short maiden speech as Tory leader by promising to win the next general election in 2024. She told the audience, We need to show that we will deliver over the next 2 years. We all will deliver for our country, and I will make sure that we use all the fantastic talents of the Conservative Party. The announcement triggers the process of a handover from Boris Johnson, who stepped down in July after months of scandals saw support for his administration drain. However, according to a new YouGov opinion poll, more than half, or 52% of British voters, believe Liz Truss will be a poor or terrible Prime Minister. Liz Truss will be taking the helm as the fourth Conservative Prime Minister since a 2015 election, at a time when the country has been struggling with soaring inflation, labour strife and crisis in the public healthcare system. The leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, responded to Truss's election as the new Conservative leader by saying, After 12 years of the Tories, all we have to show for is low wages, high prices and a Tory cost of living crisis. Average annual household utility bills are set to increase by as much as 80% in October to £3,549, before an expected rise to £6,000 next year, decimating personal finances. China's Xinhua news agency explains more about the story. Xinhua says, The UK voting took place a month after Boris Johnson was forced to step down following an avalanche of ministerial resignations over his scandal-plagued leadership. Since the winter of 2021, Britain's inflation has kept rising and successively hit new highs. Official data showed the Consumer Price Index, or the CPI, rose by 10.1% in July, far above the 2% target set by the Bank of England. The central bank projected last month that higher energy prices would push Britain's inflation to 13% in the fourth quarter of this year, and inflation is likely to remain at very elevated levels throughout much of 2023. Britain's energy regulator said in late August that the energy price cap will rise by 80% to £3,549, about $4,077 per year for an average household from October. As millions of people in Britain face the prospect of escalating bills, Keith Baker, a research fellow in fuel poverty and energy policy at Glasgow Caledonian University, said the country could face its worst peacetime crisis since the general strike of 1926. There has been a summer of disruption amid strikes by railway and airline workers, and unions across sectors are threatening waves of industrial action in the coming weeks. A dispute over the Northern Ireland Protocol, the rules governing post-Brexit trading arrangements for Northern Ireland, have strained Britain's relations with the European Union, stoking worries of a trade war if Liz Truss presses ahead with her controversial bill to rewrite the Northern Ireland Protocol. The Northern Ireland Protocol is a trade solution agreed by London and Brussels to prevent a hard border between Northern Ireland and the neighbouring Republic of Ireland following Brexit. Some experts cautioned these daunting challenges, if not properly tackled, could torpedo Liz Truss's premiership. News at Northeastern website elaborates more on this issue. Pablo Calderon Martinez, an assistant professor in politics and international relations at Northeastern University in London, says Liz Truss rises to prime minister at a time of crisis for the UK economy. Calderon Martinez says she has the most difficult brief of any new prime minister probably since the end of the Second World War. The former British Foreign Secretary inherits many problems from her predecessor, including high inflation, a potential recession, surging energy costs and anticipated fuel shortages for the winter ahead. Her party has been divided by scandals that consumed the three-year reign of her Tory predecessor, Boris Johnson, in whose cabinet Liz Truss served. Conservative voters selected Truss based on her campaign for lower taxes and diminished government. She beat her final round opponent, Rishi Sunak, despite his warning that taxes shouldn't be cut until Britain curbs its bout of double-digit inflation. Another major difference separating the two candidates was Liz Truss's perceived loyalty to Boris Johnson, whose demise was instigated in July by Rishi Sunak's resignation as Chancellor of the Exchequer. It's about trusting government. The division that has emerged in the Conservative Party between Johnson loyalists and the people that wanted to get him out of office since the very beginning is pretty much similar to what we've seen in the United States for the Republican Party around Donald Trump. It's almost a battle for the soul of the Conservative Party. Balancing these different groups is going to be very challenging for Liz Truss.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends. How about beginning the day by listening to another bezel of wisdom from Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, the seventh infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Plants grow in plain, not rocky lands. In the same way, wisdom will grow in the hearts of the modest, not the arrogant. Because God has made modesty the instrument of the mind and made arrogance the instrument of ignorance. Do you not notice that he who raises the head to the ceiling will have his head bruised? Likewise, he who bends down will enjoy the shades and the protection of the ceiling. Similarly, God will disgrace those who do not behave humbly to him and will exalt those who humble themselves for him.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, having trust. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of having trust when performing the call for good and forbidding evil. When we look at the Islamic teachings, it is said that it is necessary for the person who wants to perform the call for good and forbidding evil to have trust in the hearts of the people. Why? Because when a person who wants to reform others, if people do not trust him, they will never listen to him, and they will never trust on him because of lack of trust. If he does not have a trust in the hearts of the people, they will keep ignoring him. They will ignore him, and they will never come towards the path which he wants them or the call which he is calling for. So they will never pay attention to such thing. Therefore, it is necessary to have the trust amongst the people, and this is the fourth condition of calling for good and forbidding evil. That when we want to bring people towards the right path, when we are struggling for the people, when we want people to make a good community, to have a, a pure community from corruption, from injustice, from cruelty, from oppression. Therefore, when we say something, it must have a value in the eyes of people. If my sayings do not have any kind of value in the hearts of the people, in the eyes of people, they will never listen to me. They will never pay attention to what I'm saying. Therefore, the fourth condition, which has been said, it is necessary to have trust amongst the people, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of having trust amongst the people when performing the obligation of calling for good and forbidding evil. The fourth condition is trust. And in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also has said that لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ. Certainly, a prophet from yourselves has come towards you, who is azizun alayhi, who is loving for you, who you love, who is your friend. Ma'anittum harisun alaykum bil mu'minin raufur rahim. He is rauf and rahim. He is affectionate towards you. He is merciful towards you. And we know that people, they do trust the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They used to call him Sadiq and Amin. Sadiq means the truthful. Amin was trustworthy. He was so trustworthy that they said that if Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam says to us that there is a caravan coming from behind that mountain, we believe in him even if there is no caravan. So this was the trust which was built amongst the people. At the time of the Prophet, this was the trust of the Prophet. That's why he was known as Amin. He was known as trustworthy. And he was known as Sadiq, a truthful person. And this is one of the characteristics of a person that when we say that in the community, we want to perform the obligation of calling for good and forbidding evil, the person who is performing this, that must be trustworthy amongst the people. And this is one of the conditions that must match. And if someone does not have such a condition in him, then obviously when a person is not trustworthy, how can people listen to him? How can people go towards the goodness? Or how can he stop them from performing evil? Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living thriving crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodile seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations. A wide range of cutting-edge digital technology is grabbing the limelight at the 2022 China International Fair for Trade in Services, which is underway in Beijing. The exhibition is featuring a wide range of products, including artificial intelligence, virtual reality, metaverse, and 5G. Visitors can be seen taking virtual reality driving lessons and enjoying scenarios, including different road and weather conditions, wearing VR kits. It's the leading and largest comprehensive fair for trade and services in China. This year, an increasing number of traditional service companies are speeding up their transformations, resorting to smart technologies. The event has set up 9 thematic exhibitions, including cultural and tourism services, education and sports services, hygiene and health services, engineering, consulting, and environmental services. Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-colored foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colors mixed by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food coloring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this that you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves its purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre.
Tehran Saray Gallery takes part in a massive art exhibition in South Korea, bringing Iran's leading and emerging artist to the Asian market. Works from 6 Iranian painters are displayed at the event, where hundreds of galleries account for more than $50 million in sales annually. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Seoul's annual global art exhibition has been reinvigorated this year with additional events and a most certain boost in attendance. The Korea International Art Fair continues an evolution that began with its launch back in 2002. This year features 164 galleries and more international exhibitors than ever before. That growing cosmopolitan experience and this region's growth as an art market hub is what brought a premier Iranian gallery to Seoul.
When we started this gallery, we had the big goal to just introduce Middle Eastern artists and Iranian artists to all over the world. So when you want to introduce artists, you cannot forget South Korea and Far East as well.
Sarai had participated in last year's art fair with paintings purchased by local Korean collectors. Expanding on that success at the event and as Iranian artists are growing in international stature, Hassan Saradipour decided to display works from six Iranian artists at this year's event.
Our gallery focuses on the established and emerging artists. This artist, Abbas Nasishamlu, he just wants to show that how the nature and how the human can affect to each other, how this experience can bring it on the canvas, on the paper.
The massive exhibition featured paintings, although there were various multimedia and sculpture installations. As South Korean living standards have risen, more people have time and money to spend on such events. Their taste in art has also become more sophisticated.
South Korea used to lack art galleries compared to other countries. There was a serious lack of love for this level of culture. However, now these events, I think, create opportunities for more people to gain such appreciation.
For the first time this year, Freeze Art Fair in Seoul exhibited works from 110 galleries, including Picasso, other 20th century masters, and contemporary talents. Frank Smith, Seoul.
An Iranian movie wins the grand prize for the best film in this year's Moscow International Film Festival. In its international debut, No Prior Appointment won the Best Film and the Best Actress awards. The movie is a product of Farabi Cinema Foundation and directed by Behruz Shoaibi in Iran in 2021. It is the story of a girl named Yasaman who returns to Iran from Germany after her father's death. A short stay in her father's hometown and meeting those who know him leads her to a new understanding of humans and the concept of death. The 44th edition of the Moscow International Film Festival was held this year from September 4 to 11.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Animals, no matter pets or wild, are more vulnerable to drowning or dying in resulting floods and mudslides. A veterinarian school in Pakistan is offering free treatment for animals injured in the recent devastating floods. The veterinary surgery department of Sindh Agriculture University has set up a makeshift animal hospital as flooding hit humans and animals alike in the surrounding area. Volunteers have been providing anything from surgery to medicine and even ultrasounds to the animals free of cost. People from flood affected areas can be seen bringing their farm animals such as goats, donkeys, buffaloes, and cows into the center. The worst floods in history have killed an estimated 800,000 farm animals. But there were many heartwarming videos trolling on social media showing people come to rescue animals being stuck hopelessly.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines, and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and the broader Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month. The floating cinema of unknown waters is back in the Italian city of Venice, and spectators are getting buoyant to reach the annual Open Sea Film Festival. On board rowing boats, motorboats, gondolas and whatever capable of floating, spectators sail to the shallows behind the Giudecca Island for this one-of-a-kind cinematic experience. The audience can watch the program from their own boat or a barge with chairs for those without floating transportation. The event consists of a series of screenings, performances and presentations on a floating platform and is held for 12 nights in the Venetian Lagoon.
A new bird species has been discovered on the southernmost islands of the Americas. Biologists are baffled.
Discovering new bird species is very, very difficult and rare because the world has been more focused on observing birds. Therefore, this means the discovery site is unique in the sub-Antarctic zone, on which Chile has important sovereignty. This raises the importance of caring for the environment and unique ecosystems, as these sites will allow us to carry out research on climate change, new species and behaviors.
The tiny bird weighs only 16 grams and has a large beak with black and yellow streaks along its body. Researchers say the animal is a subcategory of a species typically found in the Patagonia forest and inhabits tree trunks. But the newly discovered cousin has surprised scientists as it learned to burrow and live in a harsh tundra climate with bitter temperatures. The Diego Ramirez archipelago, where the bird was found, is an isolated bit of land. It also lacks mammalian predators and woody plants. Biologists and researchers from Chilean universities and various academic centers studied the birds for 6 years before announcing the new species. This story will tell you about what could be the bright side of climate change, and that's the discovery of dinosaur tracks dating back to 113 million years ago. The tracks were found in the U.S. state of Texas, where drought has dried up parts of Paluxy River. Experts say the tracks belong to a two-legged dinosaur with small arms and weighing 7 tons. They say dinosaurs made the prints as they roamed muddy areas over 100 million years ago. The prints were then covered over with sediment due to a flood. And after that, they turned into limestone, protecting the prints. The experts say the tracks have not been seen either before or in decades.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Syria, Russia, Iran, and also China have condemned the looting of the Syrian people's wealth by the American occupation forces and demanded firm measures to prevent the smuggling of this country's oil abroad. Experts believe the continued stealing of Syrian oil by the United States is the main cause of the difficult humanitarian situations that Syrian citizens are suffering from. They say the looting of Syrian oil by Washington has reached its highest level, and this issue has caused the continuation of the dire humanitarian situations because millions of Syrian people suffer from lack of energy, food, water, and other essential materials. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media for further details. Please stay with us to hear more about this story. The Global Times wrote, recently the U.S. conducted fresh rounds of airstrikes in Syria, and meanwhile, its efforts to steal Syria's oil have come to a new high. The U.S. wants to be the world's police, but its practices expose that the country is merely a global hooligan, bully, and robber. According to the Syrian Arab News Agency, the U.S. occupation forces on Monday, August 29th, brought out 123 tankers loaded with Syrian oil from Al Jazeera fields toward Iraqi lands. The report said that the U.S. occupation forces on August 21st transported a convoy of 137 tankers filled with stolen oil to their bases in Iraq. On August 8, the Syrian Oil Ministry said that the U.S. and its mercenaries were stealing an average of 66,000 barrels of oil per day in Syria, about 80% of Syria's daily oil production. As a matter of fact, the U.S. has been stealing Syria's oil for several years, but now in the context of factors such as the ongoing Ukraine crisis, holding oil prices near their highest levels in years, the U.S. can gain far more from stealing Syria's oil. Tian Wenlin, a research fellow at the China Institutes of Contemporary International Relations, told the Global Times, in this way, the U.S. also wants to weaken the incumbent Syrian government economically, adding, by doing so, Washington hopes to use resources obtained in war to support that war and Takfiri terrorists, to sustain its military operations and expenditures in Syria and even the entire West Asia. As oil is a major pillar of Syria's economy, by stealing it, the U.S. is actually attempting to worsen West Asian countries' economy and undermine local people's livelihoods. But to a larger degree, the U.S. violations of Syria's sovereignty and plundering of West Asian countries' resources are for the sake of its own interest, that is, to advance more economic gains. The Modern Diplomacy website said the prolonged crisis in Syria has cost Syria's oil sector about $105 billion in direct and indirect losses. One might say that stealing Syria's oil is being done in order to impoverish the Syrian people so much so that they will turn against and overthrow Syria